Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Today I'm speaking with Sophie King, founder of Soaky London Perfumes and YouTube content creator. Her journey to entrepreneurship is nothing short of extraordinary. What started out as a dream to be a Blue Peter presenter transformed into a fragrance empire, but not before a life-changing health scare really gave her the courage to finally put herself out there. In this episode, we look at how Sophie turned her passion for perfume into a really successful YouTube channel and later her own fragrance brand. We look at the challenges of being the face of the business, dealing with online criticism, including fake reviews before her products even existed, and why she believes authenticity wins over perfection every time. She also shares candid insights about the realities of self-funding a fragrance brand, why she reviews competitors' products on her own channel, and also how surviving meningitis really shifted her perspective on risk-taking. And we also have a look at what she's got coming up next for the brand. This is a conversation about turning passion into profit and why some of life's biggest challenges turn into the greatest breakthroughs. Hope you enjoy it. Sophie, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. So it would be great to start with, as a content creator, like, how did you first get into that and what drew you to that world?
Yeah, so absolutely. So when YouTube sort of happened and started, I always thought, oh, that's something I could do. And, you know, my hobby, my sort of passion outside of work was always perfume. And I thought, oh, I could perhaps do something around that. But I never really had the confidence to do it for a while, because I guess with putting yourself out there, creating content, you always think that, you know, your friends will laugh at you, your colleagues will, you know, be watching it when you're not looking. And then I had quite a bad illness. I got meningitis. And I was in a coma for a week. And my prognosis was really bad. The expectation was that I wouldn't make it. And when I did come through the back of that, I guess it gave me a completely different perspective on everything. And one of the things I decided is, right, I'm just going to make a YouTube channel. Yeah. And going to talk about perfume, and I don't care what anyone thinks anymore. And one of the ways I think my brain works is I like to just break things down and make things simple. And when I was a student, I worked in an independent perfumery, and I found that the customer was just really confused by things like ranges. If you take something like Lancôme's L'Olivier Belle, you know, I think there are about 10 different versions they've had now.
Yeah.
People just don't, you can't expect the average person to understand the difference between them all. So I started doing videos sort of breaking down ranges, explaining perfumes. This smells like this. Is this worth the money? Can you get the same smell for something with something else that's similar? And so I just took it from there. And, you know, for a long time, nobody watched my videos. But it's been about 10 years now, and I've built up such a wonderful community on there. I think I'm around 145,000 subs now, and I learn so much from, like, people commenting on my videos every day, and I sort of have involved them in the creative process with my perfume brand as well, and sort of getting that community involved. So that's the sort of origin stories of, yeah, where my YouTube channel came from.
To sort of come through something like that and then sort of go on to build a brand, I mean, that's just incredible on its own. So, you know, really inspiring. And
yeah, definitely. Like before meningitis, I definitely cared to a fault what people thought of me. And, you know, I even remember at work in my corporate job, you know, I'd get one feedback from a manager telling me to do X. So then I just go and do X. Then another manager would say, oh, but you should do Y. And then I'd go and do Y. And, like, yeah. I'd just do whatever, like, people wanted me to do, even if it was contradictory. And I think, yeah, when you have these kind of experiences, you just sort of lose that sense of caring about other people's thoughts of you and that sense of, like, embarrassment or searching for, like, approval. And, I just like the number one thing I remember is when I came out of hospital is getting back into my own bed with like, the cotton sheets and like more than one pillow.
Oh my gosh, yes. And not having the ward lights on, like shining bright
Yeah, and
face
all
when you're trying to sleep.
the noises. And just
Yeah.
thinking like this is such a comfy bed. Like I'm so lucky. Like what, I literally live in paradise. And it just makes you see everything so differently.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was positive in the end because it gave me a different lease of life, I guess, a different perspective.
Yeah, and a huge sort of mindset shift, I imagine, as well.
Yeah, and I don't really feel like embarrassed by things anymore, or you just don't take yourself as seriously because I guess I feel very privileged to be okay.
For sure.
And also, you do realize, that famous saying, oh, you could be hit by a bus any day, you realize that that really is true.
How do you balance sharing a personal narrative with building a fragrance brand? Because I imagine that there can be a bit of a conflict sometimes talking about your own life and the journey that you've been on.
I think for me, I'm probably quite sort of upfront, and I wear my heart on my sleeve, probably to the point of a fault. So I think if I was ever gonna have a brand or make a brand, it was always gonna be me as part of the brand, just because I can't really like detach myself from this is the brand and this is me, my personality. Like I've never been very good at it. And back when I was in the corporate world, that was one of my major feedbacks that I used to get, that, it's like everyone can tell what Sophie's thinking and she wears a heart on her sleeve. And probably what was the biggest eye-opener for me was when I did my first Perfume Empress. It was announced on Fragrantica, which I'm sure lots of your listeners will be aware of, sort of Wikipedia for perfumes, a couple of weeks before it came out, before I even had any of the bottles, like no one had it. And people started putting negative reviews about it.
Seriously.
And I thought, well, I physically, there's no way you've got it. Like, no one has it.
No.
So I think that was a big learning for me that, hashtag haters gonna hate.
I mean, there are a lot of founders who didn't have your background as an influencer and maybe aren't sure about putting themselves out there as the face of the brand or as an ambassador. I mean, what are the main things that you've learned just from having that background
I
takeaway?
think just be yourself, and I know that's such a cliche thing, but I think you can spend a lot of time trying to overthink and curate and
Yes.
what's the message I want to bring across and what are my like key themes and things like that. But I think if you're just yourself, then that's what people will connect with.
For sure.
And it's really easy to be yourself. You don't have to remember anything or
Yes, people like
plan it.
authenticity, don't they? They like to feel that they can relate to someone.
Yeah, I think so. And I think like don't be afraid. I think it is really important, like, and don't overthink things like what could happen or what's the worst that could happen. I think just do it. And whenever I post something, I just like close my laptop or my phone or whatever and walk away. I'm not sat refreshing the comments or anything like that.
No,
Because I think
sure.
that can be quite like toxic. Just think, just do yourself, do you, and if the world likes it, then that's great.
And it seems like a lot of people are buying and engaging with the perfume world online through channels like YouTube and social media. Why do you think that is?
I think that perfumeries, perfume shops can be quite intimidating for
Yes.
people. And especially places like duty free where you have quite aggressive like salespeople. And because like it is often quite a complex thing to break down and to choose what you want, and you want to have a more considered experience where you try things, I think having access to that kind of information, from home on your phone, on the couch, is just making it more accessible to people. And I think also one thing I hear a lot in comments from people is that they feel that they haven't got value for money. So they might see a beautiful advertising campaign from a big designer and sort of get sucked in with that.
and then spend, £100 on a designer perfume and nobody compliments them. They can't smell it on themselves after like an hour and they feel like they've kind of been duped in a way. So I think people are looking for more like independent advice and looking to just investigate like in a comfortable way where they like can find a safe space online where they can look into it rather than being watched at by people in store.
It can be very difficult, especially online, to convey. Obviously, it's impossible to convey what something smells like and to know whether someone will like it or not. I mean, I've bought perfume online and then just been sorely disappointed because I've been like, oh, okay, that's got gardenia in it. I really like gardenia. Let me buy that. And then it's like, oh, no, it's too sweet. This isn't what I imagined at all. I mean, how do you overcome that?
I think that's true. I think the fragrance notes that are listed themselves are part of the marketing, so they're not a scientific description of what's
No.
perfume. And you're right, people can read it as if it's just going to explain what it does smell like. I think what I'd like to do a lot is say this is similar to this. This reminds me of this. If you like Ariana Grande Cloud, then you'd probably like this. If you like something oudy, you might like this. And then also just like real life situations. So for example, in Artemis, I have a peach note. And I think sometimes when you say peach, people's brain goes straight to like a Haribo peach smell or like an artificial, like sugary peach. But to me, the peach that we created in that is reminds me of going to like the supermarket and buying a punnet of peaches and like that smell, like it's crisper and sharper and greener. So I'll sort of talk about it like that, like go to the
Yeah,
supermarket
because
and
I've got that scent. It's absolutely gorgeous. I'm obsessed with it. It is like my
yeah.
fragrance. It's like you say, that peach note, it just cuts through. Now that you have your own brand, and obviously you're essentially competing with the brands that you're reviewing on your channel. So how do you manage that kind of potential conflict of interest?
Yeah, I personally don't really see it like that. Like, I don't think anyone's boats ever rose by plugging a hole in someone else's boat. So, and I also think people have more than one perfume. So
For
it's
sure.
not like buying a car where you could discover the most amazing car the day after you just bought one, but you're not going to buy another car because you just bought a car. Whereas with fragrance, people will have, fragrances for different moods. People talk about the fragrance tray, fragrance library. So I don't think it's a zero sum game. I don't think it is like a direct competition, in my view. And I also think like I want to help people. So if the right perfume for them isn't one of mine, then they should get the one that is right for them, if that makes sense. And I think that sort of advice and sort of helping people navigate is what sort of I'm all about and what people know me for. So I wouldn't want to sort of be insincere and shift away from that and suddenly be like, no, you should just get my perfume because no one else's.
Definitely, I think people appreciate that as well, and I think it's kind of a nice way to approach it because you're operating from, I know this is an overused phrase, but an abundance mindset that there's enough business out there for everyone. You're not fighting over the same customers.
You people can buy as people buy more than one perfume, and if they like something a lot, they'll get it. So it's not the kind of item that you only need one of at any one time, like a car. So I don't really think about it too much, and yeah, I don't really worry about that. I've got too many other things to worry about.
Yeah, and it seems to be working for you, so
Trying.
no need to revisit it. And a big question that a lot of founders are talking about, it seems, is fundraising. How have you found that, and what are your sort of main learnings from having done all of that?
Well, so I'm completely self-funded. So I put all my life savings plus many, many credit cards and loans into starting up the business, which obviously gives it a whole new edge because it literally is your personal money on the line. And it's in terms of sort of getting funds, investors in the future, it's definitely something I'm thinking about and considering because I think obviously a huge, to date, I've not spent any money on marketing. It's all just been me. And I know that every other brand spends a fortune on marketing. And, I think in order to reach customers that aren't on YouTube, that would never come across me Naturally, organically on social media, then I might need to start investing in marketing, and therefore, get and I would need investment in order to do that. I think, one of the big challenging things around having a fragrance brand, which is probably similar to lots of other sort of, I don't know, sort of beauty or FMCG brands, is you have to buy all the stock up front. So it's not like building an app or a service thing industry. Like, you have to buy thousands of a unit up front before you've sold any of it. So, and then you have to hold
Gamble.
that stock. So it's a very capital, like very, it's very cash intensive
Yeah.
business, which is, frustrating, and it's not something I fully realized when I started out. So again, investment would help with something like that. So it's something I'm thinking about. But I think, fundamentally, the brand is, I wouldn't want someone to come in and want to change the brand
No.
or influence it. So it's something I'm not familiar with. I've never worked or done anything in the investment world. I don't know very much about it, and I find it quite scary. But it's something I'm thinking about at the moment.
What about like crowdfunding and stuff like that? Has that been?
Yes. So I did do a Kickstarter campaign for my first fragrance for Empress. That ended up raising less than half of what I actually needed to spend. But the Kickstarter was amazing, and I think what was really rewarding was, so the amount of people that ordered when it was still a like idea. It wasn't a physical product, it didn't exist. Like, that support was really overwhelming and really like humbling. And yeah, I wouldn't have been able to do it without the Kickstarter. So I do recommend that definitely if people do have an existing community, and like it's fantastic that something like that exists.
And what's next for you? Like, what's the big picture? Like, and then what is kind of next on the horizon that you're allowed to
Yeah,
well.
so my next perfume is coming out in a few months. So that's all going to be arriving here with me soon, and then I'll be bottling all my 50
Exciting
mils of
times.
travel sprays and samples myself. So that's going to be coming out soon. So definitely watch this space for more information on that. And I am in conversation with a few retailers who have physical stores here in London. So hopefully soon I'll be able to let people know places where people can actually go and physically see the product and try it
Fantastic.
in person. So that's super exciting. And then the next step really will be working on future releases next year. I'm hoping to do two releases next year, fingers crossed. So everything will sort of start on them after my next release.
That's really exciting. And obviously, mergers and acquisitions is like making big news at the moment. Could you ever see yourself being bought by a large conglomerate in the future?
Crikey. Gosh, I don't know. I don't know who would want to buy me. I think it would be quite depressing to see your own brand like being run by someone else and you're not remotely involved. And I know Jo Malone has spoken about that a lot, how she didn't know, she's not been involved in Jo Malone London for a long
I mean,
time.
some founders still stay on board, don't they, as like creative director and things like that. So it's a good
So
option.
potentially that could be really cool. I find that all that world highly mysterious and unclear, and I don't know what it would actually look like. So I honestly don't know. And I'm just gonna keep on doing my thing at the moment and see what happens. But yeah, that whole sort of M&A investors, all that sort of financial world, I find very scary and alien, and I don't know anything about it.
But I guess never say no. It's nice the idea of being able to retire one day and
Well, quite like I am getting married next year, and
Oh,
I should
congratulations.
probably think about other life things beyond you. But yeah, I can't imagine that would happen anytime soon. But
Yeah, see what the future holds.
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much for joining me, Sophie. It was really lovely chatting with you, and congratulations on the brand, and can't wait to see what you get up to next.
Ditto. Thanks so much, Viola. Really enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.